Denise, can you stop? I'm sorry. Hello and welcome to the Dr. Denise Show. I'm Kathleen O'Toole. This is Dr. Denise's special carve-out series. It's called On Staying Sane, and that's the goal on this Mental Health Awareness Month, right, Dr. Denise?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's like almost like for all of us, the joke of the universe living on planet Earth, right?
Yeah.
Another day on the Earth ride. How are you, Kathleen? I always love hearing your voice.
So we talked about what we're going to talk about during Mental Health Awareness Month, and we thought we would talk about perfectionism. And we're calling this podcast Confessions of a Recovered Perfectionist. Now, I can't wait for you to lead us down this path because you have so much to say about it. But there's the first thing that we have to kind of define, and you're going to do it in your Dr. Denise cool way, is defining adaptive versus restrictive perfectionism. Take it away, Dr. Denise.
Okay, so confession, I'm a lover of words and the power of how they influence our actions. And so even in this moment, when you even say I'm staying sane versus I'm doing well, you get this feeling, right? So adaptive versus restrictive perfectionism. So perfectionism, a lot of people that come to see me in my practice are very high achieving. There's nothing wrong. I think we can all agree that part of mental health is doing our best. But then what is our best? And how do we do our best in the most peaceful way? And hopefully we can even have some fun. So to me, adaptive versus restrictive, perfectionism. I think we're living in a time where humanity has gone way more vulnerable, way more, you know, be your authentic self. So this perfectionism term even kind of has changed throughout the year. So the adaptive part is that when you are doing your best, whether it's being your best as an athlete, a parent, at your job, in your relationships, can you do your best and still actually be being healthy for yourself, having an integrative balance? So adaptive is actually having a more peaceful, joyful way of reaching your top goal with whatever you're doing. So that's very like light and like, wow, I've got this. And it also sets the mindscape, the mind landscape, mindscape of it's going to be okay. It's like a lot less stressful. Now, restrictive, do you want to say anything or ask before I tell you about restrictive?
No, I'm saving my questions.
Okay.
So the definitions.
Okay. So restrictive perfectionism is really common. If you are someone that might have a obsessive compulsive personality style, whether you have a diagnosis, whether you have OCD, you know, high achieving type A, you're like always wanting to get like the 100%, or you want to be first, or you get like a 96 on your paper when you're a kid, but you're still not happy. It could have been better. Or you don't even know when to stop studying. It's almost like you're possessed. And the same thing, maybe, you know, as an athlete, you need sometimes to have that level of maybe shooting like so many baskets in a day, or swimming your fastest lap, or running as fast. So there's nothing wrong with having that high level kind of fine-tune expert way, but do it in a way where you're challenging yourself to level up, where you actually give yourself credit. A lot of times the restrictive perfectionism, it often comes into play for me as a psychiatrist. A lot of people that come to see me that have different nutrition issues, whether that's anorexia or bulimia, a lot of the high-achieving A students that are maybe just using nutrition to sort of control when they can't control not getting the 100. And so the adaptive versus restrictive perfectionism for me as a doctor in practice comes into play with a lot of high achieving people where it's just never good enough. So even if everyone else is like, oh my God, your paper was amazing, or you really delivered that speech great, the person will find the one thing they did wrong and they'll focus on that and they'll have no joy, even in the face of excellence.
Okay, so what if you're listening to this and you're like, that's me. I don't have joy even when I'm achieving at an excellent level. Everyone tells me it's great, but I think they don't have high standards. What if that's you? I mean, like you said, there's nothing wrong with it. It makes for a lot of success, but it also wears on a person.
Absolutely. So, you know, we all come in different shapes, sizes, colors, goals, ambitions. We all have different neurostyles. So if you are a high achiever, you're like, oh my God, please adapt versus restrictive perfectionism. Forget that. I want the 100. I don't want to listen to this show. But if you're someone who's literally suffering and you have a catastrophic loop where you've tried to give yourself breaks, like let's say you are that person, you're like, wait, that sounds like me. I really, you know, I am on paper. I look fantastic, but I'm just kind of miserable. So you can be miserable for different reasons. You know, everyone, you could have like, and not, by the way, it doesn't mean you have a diagnosis, but you're asking a psychiatrist. Maybe the most common people's neurostyles that I see that might have this kind of restrictive perfectionism. What I would say to you is ask yourself, do I want to have more joy? Do I want to have more fun? Why isn't it good enough? Is there something, if I look back at my own, if I kind of am here in the earth body and I fly outside of myself and look down and kind of like imagine a timeline in front of myself of my own life, was there any pattern? Was there any family dynamic? Was there any traumatic event? Was there anything that happened that maybe made you feel like you're not good enough? So that's one big question domain. Then two, if you are like, wait a second, I want to be in recovery. Like I want to still do my best and be high achieving, but I just want to have more fun. So I think you could set different breaks throughout your day as like little rewards. Like let's say you're working on a paper, or let's say you have a really busy day with clients. I think one way to have more joy and give yourself a positive self-talk pause is to start to build in pauses throughout your day. So I can give you an example.
Please.
Okay, this isn't something I would have done 10 years ago different than I did like 2 weeks ago. I had such an amazing inspirational call. I can't even right now remember what it was about, but it was just such a fun, such a creative, such an exciting call. And it was just, it warmed your heart. You're like, oh my gosh, this is why I'm doing all these podcasts or shows. It was just such a rewarding connection. And then right at that same moment, I was getting like a good feeling in my like happiness of my day. I had a patient emergency, a text that was way like more, like it wasn't like 911 life threatening, but it was like, I need to talk to you soon. Right. You know, the old me would have jumped right into solving that. I need to talk to you now, and wouldn't have done this mindful pause where I go, wait a second, ask the question, God, I'm sure feeling good after that last interaction. Do I want to like let that sink in? So I actually enjoy the success of the happy moment? Or do I want to go straight into a crisis and kind of almost like steal the thunder of letting that solidify, like from a self-esteem standpoint or a joy? So I made the strategic decision because now I'm more mindfully aware and not this frenetic. So I think it includes this mindful pause. I literally texted the person and I said, I can be available in 30 minutes. They were so happy. Then I went and got my little cute coffee. I like my little coffees. And I like took inventory of the other great things that just happened. I called another friend. I don't even know if I called you. It's hard to remember even what this was. But I remember just so doing it differently that like 7 years ago, 10 years ago, I would have went straight into almost like a frenetic, high achieving flight or fight, no pause. Dun, 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 on to the next frame. Dun, 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 no time. Dun, 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 stop, drop, and roll, 911. And now I go, wait. And I do a pause and I let myself have more joy of what's going, and then I'm more focused and more intuitive in the next moment.
So that's a confession of a recovered perfectionist.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I have more things that I'm like, I like.
We love these examples.
Do you want more examples or do you want to give one? I just want to be respectful because you ask such great questions.
I really never suffered too badly with, I take that back, but the restrictive perfectionism, like, you know, I wasn't out there shooting baskets till the wee hours of the morning. I always realized I needed to take a break after a while with whatever I was doing, shutting down, good sleep. Give us another example of a confession of a recovered perfectionist.
Well, I can give you a confession of mine, and then I can do some examples that I see in my practice. For instance, I let myself have messy, sloppy days. So I look at my calendar and I look at what percentage is, because I'm a single mother, full-time single mom, doctor, producer, and I've learned to give myself a lot of grace. Because I really have decided, I love being a mother. But when you're a mom, and also during the pandemic, I still haven't gotten anyone to help me with my house, which I've kind of realized that's a form of adaptive perfectionism, because I used to have someone help me, and the house used to look a lot better every week than it does now.
Right.
And when I leave to go drop my son off at school, I almost divide the little time, like breakfast time, dun, dun, dun. Like, how do I make this beginning part of the day a good start? So one of the big confessions, or maybe a tip or a hack, is something I talk about all the time, which everyone's going to always hear, is gratitude is my secret sauce. So when I wake up, I used to, way back when, before I had this awareness of how powerful, I've always known how powerful our words, thoughts, and actions, but I feel like I keep having humility of learning even how deeper you can do this. So when I wake up, I try to look at my calendar, then I have gratitude, then I almost like get myself excited, energized with gratitude. And so that sets me up so I don't go back into restrictive, like, oh, your house isn't clean enough. Oh, you know, why did you let your son stay up too late last night? Or why did you not pick up the cat bowls and put them in the sink? So what I've learned, and I don't know if it's just the humility of having children, is like, you have to let a lot of stuff go.
Yeah.
But I need to, my way, my neurostyles, and I know some people are like, oh, this isn't, show isn't for me, I don't have this perfectionism issue. I have to give myself little cute, what I call pep talks throughout the day. And I'm like even sending you the show link, I think I used to do it the day before. And I know I should probably do it when I wake up on the day of the show. I think I'll get better at that. But I thought, oh, it's better if it's at the top of your queue. So like, I've just learned to kind of be a little bit more flexible. So one for me is like, today I've decided I haven't made my bed yet. So just little things, like, I like to have my bed made. It's pretty much made 99% of the time, or no, 90%. But sometimes I let it go and I enjoy the mess. So what the recovery looks like is being more mindful of going, wait, I've got food, shelter, clothing. My kid just got dropped off on time. He's happy. He's actually got a play date. That's already a win. Is today energetically the day you need to clean? No, not yet. You're still healing up your foot. So I do like a check-in. I think like maybe when people don't realize their own internal, for the On Staying Sane series, how do you stay sane? You need to be your own best friend for anything we're talking about. So this adaptive versus restrictive perfectionism is having an awareness that maybe you weren't talking to yourself nicely before. So it's really about the quality of how you do your own self-talk to then inspire you to go moment to moment. The restrictive and adaptive would be giving yourself a break, giving yourself credit, practicing more grace. The restrictive perfectionism is almost like you're your own worst enemy. Oh, you didn't make the bed yet? Oh, another day of not making your bed. Oh, today, oh, you're not going to use the Swiffer now? Oh, okay. You're going to wait till the weekend. What's that all about? Why are you procrastinating? Like, you could just, oh, okay, wait, what are you doing? Like, it could be like the constant critic.
Yeah. So this is something that I kind of didn't understand until hearing this. So you could be a restrictive perfectionist, yet like someone looking in from the outside would think, oh no, she's not. Nothing's clean at her house. Her work assignments are always in late, you know, whatever, right? Like, so you can be a restrictive perfectionist and really not be a high achiever either.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'd have to, we're not, you know, if we were going to do a book on this, I'd have to actually have lists on it. I don't want to do the main, I don't know if I really, no, it's really the quality of your self-talk is either adapt. Let's just to even take the word perfectionism verse away for a sec. Let's just focus on that. Cause you're talking about the quality of the outcome, adaptive versus restrictive in itself. Adaptive allows, like, you're your own best friend.
Right.
Restrictive is like you're beating yourself up with a frying pan again and again. Well, and you're not even having joy.
That's no fun.
And I put those terms in front of the perfectionism. I heard those terms first in 2004 at an American Psychiatric Association meeting specifically about eating disorders and helping people with cognitive reframing. Because a lot of times people have, when they're having struggling with nutrition or body dysmorphia, they're like their absolute worst. They like the scale has to be a certain way and they'll look in the mirror. They'll right. find one part of their body that's sticking out too much. Am I bloated? Did I drink too much water? So I've just used the concept of adaptive versus restrictive in anything because it can be applied. It's another universal truth. I mean, if you want to give me a scenario of something you had to struggle with anything in as a mother or in your work life, we could break it down or you could throw me a question and we could look at how these terms are so helpful in almost our own accountability, asking yourself the question, was I being kind to myself in that moment or my own best friend or was I being my worst enemy?
So I think, you know, I guess because of one of my major roles in life is as a mother, right? So I think of it in that respect, like, okay, you've got these emerging little people who are growing and self-evaluating. And so how do we even take it down to make it even a little bit more simple so that we can foster that great adaptive personality in these kids who might naturally be adaptive or not be adaptive at all, because that's a hard trait to have as a child. So how can we kind of help mold adaptive people?
Yes. Well, okay. I'm going to go there about being a mom and kids, but I just want to make sure you did ask me a very strategic question and I want to answer it. The answer is yes. You can be a restrictive perfectionism and still not have your house look great.
Right. Or good work on time at work or.
Yes. So you could be the one who has it all figured out and it looks great on paper and you look like you've got it all together and you could still be adaptive or restrictive perfectionism. But it's really about are you achieving your best and still having joy? Or are you achieving your best and you're miserable?
Right. That's what I got from it. And I think that's going to be really eye-opening to people.
Well, I hope so, because it gives us a way to talk about it that's more real. So then you just asked a very powerful question. And I'm so thankful for your inquisitive mind. So even in this moment, I'm grateful that we're fleshing this out deeper. So thank you. So you asked about how do we shape our children to hopefully be set up for the success of the most adaptability and resiliency, correct?
Correctamundo.
That's a really, you know, for me, it would be great if you had I'm going to give a broad description of how that's possible, but then maybe you can be specific. So essentially we have to accept that we all process and perceive things in our own unique way. And so for our children and for ourselves, when we are parents and a child comes into the world, we might already have our ideas of if it's our own genetic child versus I'm an adoptive mother, we're going to put our own biases, or we might go, oh, well, when I was a kid, I felt this way. I think the most important thing to remember as a parent is that your child has their own unique way they're interacting with the environment. So when you spend quality time with your child, you start to realize like when they're little babies, you have to listen to how much are they crying? Does their diaper feel full? You have to literally be there with them to help them navigate the world. And I think that keeps going through infant, toddler, preschool, elementary, and teen years, but it just developmentally changes. So I feel for my situation right now, I can be more specific as a mother. I love being the one that picks my son up at the bus stop, drops him off, because I find that children that are, when they're older and they're talking to you, and even when they're younger, you find out a lot about their behavior when they communicate to you verbally and non-verbally. So you start to find out what your kid likes and what they don't like. And then a good parent, when you're trying to help them be resilient and flexible, if they're trying out a new sport, a new instrument, a new social situation, a new school, you need to figure out, just like there's the five languages of love, I believe that the five languages of love that are in that dating are also applicable to any relationship, parental, work, and anything. So I believe that there was this incredible book, The Five Languages of Love, but I feel like there's different ways that people have sensory awareness and sensory experience. So with our kids, this does apply too. There's words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, gifts, and then physical touch. And then I feel like there's a sixth one where it's just all very integrated and you understand the human being or the person, your child, so much so that you know how to integrate. So for instance, my son's an acts of service and quality time. So the way to have our children have more adaptive versus restrictive perfectionism as parents, we create a safe place for them, food, shelter, clothing. We create a sense of purpose. We know their unique neurostyle. And then those different languages of love, when we know how to communicate with them, we get closer to them, or whoever we are, we get closer to people, then they're more vulnerable. So like, let's say now your kid's about to, like my son. Well, first of all, do you want to ask me an example now that I've explained it? I want to make sure I pause.
I want to hear the son.
Okay. So my son told me at the beginning of the school year, this is the first time in the fall that he went back to school in person at his new school, that he feels great self-esteem. It's great for his sensory style. It's our universe gift, this school. But he told me, now, mom, do not be scheduling these play dates right away. That is enough for me just to adapt to school. I had a talk with all my friends on the playground, and we do not need after school play dates. And I'm like, okay, well, we'll reassess that in October. So like I listened to him, let him have a sense of control and mastery that he didn't want to put the energy out after he gave all of his energy pellets. So I was proud of him that he was aware that that was already a big deal. I'm like, oh, well, way to go and speaking your truth. But you know, eventually we'll need to do some socializing outside of school. I didn't make him a restrictive parent, would have said, nope, we're doing a play date in a week. Right. So that would be restrictive. Now I let him evolve over time with he's known as the comedian at school. I went to the Mother's Day tea. My mom was there. I met these lovely mothers. A lot of these kids' sensory style, they have real sensory perception, like spidey senses. Some of them want like the least amount of play dates. And so my son got invited to this. This is a big win for me. He is going to a pool party today. And he woke up excited saying, mom, everyone's going to be there of my friend group. I am so excited.
Aww.
So somehow from that day in the car, when he said, no play dates, these are not going to be my friends or only my school friends. He went from that. And then I just mirrored flexibility. And he did one other one-on-one get together with someone. But that patience and that resiliency I think that's an example of adaptive versus restrictive parenting perfectionism.
Right.
And not judging myself going, what are you doing? You're a lame parent. You're not even making them do play dates.
Right.
Da, 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 da. Because like, even when I heard your summer plan, when you and I were trying to possibly see if we can see each other this summer, I'm like, wow, Kathy's got it figured out. And then I'm like, now, Denise, remember, Kieran just had a win. He just did 3 months of fencing that really knocked you out of the water. He doesn't want to do it anymore. But now he's got his dad coming that he hasn't seen for 5 months. Maybe you're wanting to be like light on the summer plans and like just like sit down this weekend and go, does he want to do Camp Awesome? Or do we just wait till I get back from Maui? So maybe when I was younger, if I had been a younger parent or 10 years ago, I might have been like, oh my God, you haven't signed up for summer camps. What are you doing? Like Kathleen's got like trips, plans, weekends.
I will say you're talking about what I wanted to talk about next is the evolution of it. Because when my kids were little, you know, there's an ancestral footprint, right? That mm-hmm. you know, the way one is raised. And when my kids were little and we had to get out the door and it was like, we need to be on time. And I was like, you know, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, I was not pleasant. Mm-hmm. And there has been an evolution with my restrictiveness that now I'm like, well, we might be late. It's going to be okay. We'll be 10 minutes late. We'll let them know. Or when they used to spill milk, you know, it's another ancestral thing. Like my parents, you can't spill milk. It smells forever, blah, blah, blah. And I would like lose my cool when they would spill. And they were little kids, is supposed to spill, right? I mean, big kids spill, adults spill. But now I'm like, I learned the oops, oops.
Oops, and I'm made a mistake. That's all. Mistakes can happen to anyone. Go ahead.
So, I mean, you know, here I'm being a little restrictive, like saying, well, I hope I didn't change my ways I hope I didn't change my spots too late for them that I ruined them. But the answer is like, yeah, I had to have an evolution of this. Like, these are little people they're not a military operation. They cannot leave at precisely the time that you want them to. And you know what? It's going to be okay. And so that comes with experience and taking that, becoming mindfully aware and checking in and realizing that it doesn't matter if I'm judged on my punctuality or, you know, that my house doesn't smell like spoiled milk. It doesn't matter. Like, just try to lighten up, Francis. And so that's been a great evolution that I've seen. And you talked about it too, that maybe 10 years ago with your patients, you would have been right on the phone. And you would have been, no, Kieran, you have to do this. And now we're like, wait, let's check in. Let's let the energy be the way energy should be.
Well, I have to tell you, I just got a text that I can integrate into the show if that's okay. Because it has to do with what to do. And I know that we're all over this. We're so like the mass versus the no mass. You know, I just had my son's dad weigh in from a distance, but I already made the decision this morning. You know, the numbers are upticking here in LA, and, you know, I'm really fortunate because I hear a lot because I'm a doctor. So I know what my patients are experiencing. So we got an email from the school saying the teachers are going to finish off the year wearing a mask. We'd strongly suggest to do that. And it's not a mask mandate right now. And I just said to my son, honey, I love you. I know you love not wearing the mask, but mom's trying to do a trip and I'm trying, this is my first time getting on a plane, since 2019. And I said, honey, I love you. If I wasn't going on a trip, I would say, you know, maybe, you know, if your friends aren't wearing it, you don't need to, but he went to school yesterday and today, and I'm having him wear the mask indoors just to be on the safe side. There's been some COVID at his school, and my adaptive versus restrictive perfectionism, I almost didn't let him make him wear it today because I didn't want him to feel like he's the only kid and peer pressure. But I checked in with him yesterday. I go, are you mad at me that I made you wear the mask? He's like, no, I'm not mad. I go, honey, I really love you. And I just want you to know that I'm really trying to go on this trip and you can take the mask off at outdoors, but I'm just trying to practice what I know now. And so he's like, okay, mom. So when I explain to him the why, he doesn't seem like I'm being like this militant, mean parent. Cause then I'm like, oh my God, am I like the weirdo parent? And he said that three other people were wearing it. And then I needed validation. So I was going to say, everyone, when you're dealing with decisions, whether it's with your kids or with work decisions, like who to hire, who to promote, or did I, like, you're doing awesome stories, Kathleen, and producing, I think it's good to like have our own inner voice be there. But then if we have like an inner circle, like another parent, another colleague, another friend, when we have a certain neurostyle, we can mirror back to each other to help ourselves be more flexible and adaptive.
Right. Excellent. Well, I mean, I know you've talked a lot about this in your practice. Before we go, was there anything that really significant that you wanted to make sure that we took stock in?
I think that a big myth buster, if you're thinking recovering of being a perfectionist, I think the biggest myth buster I would say, and I always say this to people, you can still get the A+, or you can still achieve your best day at parenting, or your best day at work, or your best way as an athlete. But the myth busting part of adaptive versus restrictive is having more peace, balance, and joy while you're doing it. So I'm not saying don't try to do your best. I'm saying do it, but do it with grace, flexibility, and have some fun.
Wow. Well, that's a great ending. Thank you, Dr. Denise.
Thank you. Thank you for always asking the right questions, Kathleen.
I appreciate that. Nice compliment. All right. We'll talk to them next time, right?
Yes. Thanks, everyone. Thank you.